Today we're beginning here on the bottom of Chof Ted Amud Bet by the Gemara. The Mishnah discussed different scenarios. The first scenario in the Mishnah was somewhat clear. It sounded like you were dealing with different avodot. You were dealing with an avodah where you had a machshava chutz lizmano, and then other avodot by which you had other machshavot. And those other machshavot undermined what you had said about chutz lizmano, and would not be considered to be pigul for a chiyuv karet. On the other hand, if you had just a machshavat chutz lizmano, then that would be pigul, and even if you have it in a multiple of avodot. Then you had a second part of the Mishnah, where it spoke about, where it did not specify the avodah, but rather specified the kzayit as being the differentiating factor with the machshavot. Kzayit b'chutz, kzayit l'machar. They had a case where you did a kzayit for chutz lizmano and kzayit chutz l'mkomo. Once again there, the fact that you have a machshava besides the chutz lizmano undermines the pigul, and then you won't have a chiyuv karet. There we had Rabbi Yehuda who argued, and Rabbi Yehuda said it has to do with the order in which you have the psul come about. If the other psul preceded chutz lizmano, it would not reach the level of pigul of chiyuv karet. If chutz lizmano was first, then it could reach the level of pigul and chiyuv karet. Now, that second part of the Mishnah, Amar Ilfa, Machloket, the machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, b'shtei avodot, is in a case where you're speaking about two different avodot. Aval b'avodah achat, in a single avodah, divir hakol iruv machshavot havi. So what he is suggesting here is that Rabbi Yehuda says that there is precedence, meaning that you decide which one was said first, and that has impact on whether it is pigul or not pigul, that you can say when they're in defined categories. Each midibor, each machshava, was done on a particular item, a particular avoda. But if you have them done in a single avoda, they're meshed together in a single avoda, then even Rabbi Yehuda recognizes at that point, you can't speak about what was first and what was second. They all happened in the same avoda. It's really irrelevant which one you said first, because you're not talking about a group of sequential items, you're speaking about it within a single item, and therefore precedence doesn't matter in that case. In that case, it would, like the Chachamim, he would believe that it is not pigul, because no matter whether you have a makshava, another improper makshava before, or after the makshava chutz lizmano, just like the Chachamim, he'll agree there that it doesn't become pigul. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afba v'choda achat machloket. Even within a single avoda, it is a machloket, and that means that he believes that order matters, even within one single avoda, order matters. Now here, with regards to avodah achat and shtei avodot, Rashi over here explains similar to what he said earlier in the Masechta. We're speaking about literally one avodah and shtei avodot. Tosafot over here already raises that issue and speaks to what he said earlier in the Masechta, that maybe avodah achat and shtei avodot doesn't really mean one avodah like shkita, shtei avodot like shkita and kabbalah. Rather, one avodah means within one part of an avodah, and shtei avodot means within two parts in avoda. For instance, shchita, where it has two simanim, shtei avodot can be two separate simanim. Each one of the simanim would be considered to be separate. There's some sort of delineating factor that would say that you're splitting up the dibur between two items, not necessarily that it's literally shtei avodot. The reason to say this, or the reason this might have impact, is later on in the Gemara, we're going to see other machlokot. And the question is, are they taking a position with regards to Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan over here? And if you learn it like Rashi, it's clear that they believe the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and they are taking a position within Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, if you learn like the Baalei Tosafot, as the Baalei Tosafot point out, I can reconcile Abai and Rava, who are going to come up in the Gemara, like Ilfa or like Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore it's not necessarily true that they're speaking within that position of Rabbi Yochanan. But just like we saw earlier in the Masechta, when Baalei Tosafot asked on Rashi, from the fact that avodah achat and shtei avodot, is that really one avodah and two avodot? Or rather, does it mean within one avodah, there's some avodot that you can split into two parts? And then we're speaking about the shtei avodot then means the two parts of that single avodah, not two separate avodot. So in essence, the question of the Gemara and what Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa are speaking to is how far-reaching is Rabbi Yehuda's position about order. Is order meaningful no matter what you say? That's Rabbi Yochanan's position. Or is order only meaningful when it's discrete? When you're dealing with one avodah, two avodot, that's fine. But when you're in a single avodah, to speak about order is no longer relevant because it's not a discrete item. So Bishlam Ale Ilfa, according to Ilfa's explanation, that the machloket is only about Shtei Avodot. By Avodat Achat, Rabbi Yehuda does not disagree. Midereisha b'shtei Avodot, say Benami b'shtei Avodot. And the Reisha is clearly speaking about two Avodot. And there, two Avodot is like Rashi's two Avodot, which means Shkita and then Holacha. So to the Seifa, speaking about shtei Avodot. Also, where Rabbi Yehuda argues on the Chachamim with regards to Kazayit, Lamachar, Kazayit, Bachutz, there too, he's speaking about shtei Avodot. And there's a consistency within the Mishnah, and you're always speaking about Shtei Avodot. And the Rabbi Yochanan, Reisha B'Shtei Avodot, Sefer B'Avodah Achat, Rabbi Yochanan, it's much more complex than the Mishnah in the beginning is speaking about Shtei Avodot. Then later on, in the Machloket Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim, you're dealing with a different topic, which is Avodah Achat. Gemara says it, Reisha B'Shtei Avodot. Gemara answers yes, but not exactly yes. It says yes, in the beginning, you're speaking about Shtei Avodot, Sefer Ben B'Avodah Achat, Ben B'Shtei Avodot. It's not that Sefer is exclusively speaking about Avodah Achat. Same speaking about both Avodah Achat and Shtei Avodot. And that way it's not as far-fetched to say that it's a continuation of the Reisha, because it's also speaking about Shtei Avodot. It happens to add in Avodah Achat as well, but it's not exclusively about Shtei Avodot. Then the Mishnah continues and says, Tan, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Zaklau. Our Mishnah says that Rabbi Yehuda brings up a principle. Im machshevet hazman kadma l'machshevet hamakom pigul. Chayvin alav karet. If the machshava about chutz lizmano preceded the other machshava that was pasul, then you have pigul and you have a karet if someone consumes that korban. Bishlam other Rabbi Yochanan, hainu tani zeaklau. According to Rabbi Yochanan, I understand why there's a zeaklau. So the way that Rashi reads this is like a classic Bavli question, which is anytime the Mishnah says zeaklau, it's not giving you a summary of what it said before. Zeaklau means it must be adding something on. It must be telling you more information than you would have by simply reading the details inside of the Mishnah. The Megillah says you don't need a Mishnah to summarize something when you could do that on your own. Zeaklau must be then adding on top of the details that are here, something in excess of what you would have known from the Mishnah. So according to Rashi, that's classic Zeaklau question of the Bavli, and that's what they're asking over here. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Zeaklau comes to teach you that not only is this true by Shtei Avodot, it's also true by Avodah Achat. Meaning that if the Mishnah thematically is speaking about Shtei Avodot, Zeaklau comes to say, don't think it's only by Shtei Avodot, it's even by Avodah Achat. The Rebbe says this. Elo the Ilfa, my Zeaklau. According to Ilfa, what do you need Zeaklau for? It's not adding anything. It's speaking about Shtei Avodot in the Reisha, Shtei Avodot in the Seifa. Zeaklau, how is that additive in any way? What information did you not know before that you have now? That's a classic question of the Bible. That's the way Rashi learns over here. Look in the sheet of Mikubetzed in Ot Aleph. He suggests that the question is more fundamental and not just a question of inclusion, but a question of how does Zeaklau work in this case? According to Rabbi Yochanan, Zeaklau is actually true. Zeaklau is a principle that's true no matter what, both in Shtei Avodot and Avodah Achat. Whereas for Ilfa, Zeaklau is not true. Zeaklau is only true by Shtei Avodot. It's not true by Avodah Achat. And that's the nature of the question. Zeaklau seems to be you're introducing a general principle that's always true for Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. All cases will be that way. Well, that's true in Rabbi Yochanan's Shita because he believes Rabbi Yehuda argues it through all the cases. But according to Ilfa, he only argues in one of the two cases. The scenario of Shtei Avodot he argues, but by Avodah Achat he doesn't argue. How can you make a general statement of Zeaklau? And then that would be a kasha. That's a strong question against Ilfa's position. It's not hotum. So now the Gemara is jumping to Tmura, and it's going to do that because there's an assumption here that there is a correlation between the opinion of Rabbi Meir that's found in Tmura and Rabbi Yehuda's position that is found here, and that is the concept of Tfos Lashon Rishon, which means that when you have a statement that embodies within it two facts or two positions, we assume Tfos Lashon Rishon. Whatever came out first, that is what is binding. Everything else afterwards is an attempt to reverse what you said up front, and it's impossible, or it's efshar, to reverse such an item. That's what it says here. It's not hotam. Harzei tmurat ola, tmurat shlamim. He has two animals sitting in front of him. One is an ola, one is a shlamim. Then he has an animal that is chulin, and he wants to attempt to do what we just read in this week's parsha, tmura. He wants to exchange the kedusha from those animals onto the animal of chulin. The din that we saw in this week's parsha is hu utmurato iya kodesh. Both original animal remains kadosh, and so too the animal that you try to make kadosh becomes kadosh. That's hu utmurato iya kodesh. Problem here is he said tmurat ola, tmurat shlamim. He wanted this to be exchanged, two different korbanot to put that kedusha onto this animal. So what happens in that scenario where he has both of them? So Rabbi Meir says, Hari zut murat olah, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that the first statement that came out of his mouth was, Hari zut murat olah. That's the binding part of the statement, tfos lashon rishon. Everything else afterwards is an attempt to undermine it, to take away from it, and it has no bearing on the case. It's not binding in any way. Amar Rabbi Yossi, in the kach nitkaven tchila, if that's what he intended originally, if this was his intent, then how can you say that it's not binding? How can you say that it's meaningless, the second statement? By definition, if he wanted to make it into a tmurat ola ushlamim, how would he go about doing this? Elim gain, he made statements that are sequential. A person can't simultaneously say tmurat ola and tmurat shlamim. It's just impossible. So you have to do it sequentially. But if that's his intent when he did it sequentially, that it happens simultaneously, then why can't it happen simultaneously? And in this case, if he did this and it was binding, we would say that the animal is both a tmurat ola and shlamim, which obviously is impossible because you can't bring something as an ola and a shlamim. So what we'll say is that the animal's value will now be distributed between those two korbanot. This animal itself can't go on the mizbeach because it's a mix between ola and shlamim. Once it gets a mum in it, you can sell it, and with those proceeds, you can bring in ola and a shlamim. You'll divide it up between the two of them, but in that way, you're mekayim his words. You're mekayim that which he said. Now, the Baal Yitzchak point out that in the Gemara and Perek Meruba by Baba Kama, that this statement that Rabbi Yossi is in the kach nitkavein. If this was his intentions, it doesn't mean that we ask him what his intentions were, but rather there's a siman within the statement as to what his intention was. That has to do with the amount of pause he has between the first statement and the second statement. There's otherwise a concept known as toch kedei dibur. Toch kedei dibur means if you're within a certain fraction of time, then we believe the statement is continuous and it's all one statement versus breaking it up into two separate statements. And the Baal Tosfot over here say that that toch kedei dibur is determined by two different types of toch kedei dibur. There's a toch kedei dibur katan, which is when a Rebbe is addressing his Talmud, and he says, Shalom Aleichem. The toch kedei dibur gadol is when the Talmud is addressing the Rebbe, and he says, Shalom Alecha Rebbe, or Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori. So there's a slightly longer gap in that case. And he says, that's how you know what he was coming to. If the statements are juxtaposed to each other in such a fashion that the gap is less than toch kedei dibur katan, then it means that he meant it or intended for it to be a single statement. If, on the other hand, the gapping is that of a toch kedei dibur gadol, which is Shalom Alecha Rebbe or Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori, is that the gap already? We see it as being two statements and possible reversal of his position, and therefore only the first statement would be binding. So Gemara says, V'im emisha amar ezeh tmurat ola'ah v'nim lach, v'amar ezeh tmurat shlamim, ezeh ola'ah. Rabbi Yossi agrees that if he makes a statement that he wants it to be an ola, then he backs away and says, I want to be a shlamim. That he can't do. Because once it's an ola, he can't make it into a shlamim. So that he agrees with. Rabbi Meir says that's always the case. Because as soon as you make the statement of Reza ola, automatically it becomes an ola, and there's nothing to discuss after that point. Even if you make another statement and you want them to be together, it just doesn't matter because tfos lashon rishon. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says it depends on the intent of the individual. We said over here intent may not be intent really. It just might have to do with the structural details of how he said it, but in one case, it'll mean that he said it together, simultaneous, and therefore it's binding simultaneously. The other case would be that it is a reversal of his position. The case where it's a reversal of his position, then it's an ola, like Rabbi Meir said. Ibailahu. Hare zut murat ola vishlamim mahu. What happens if he says, this is an ola ushlamim? He binds them together. Now, the question of the vav, we will get to later on in today's daf. Right now the focus is in eliminating the word tmura. Instead of saying harizu tmurat ola, tmurat shlamim, where he says the word tmura twice, which delineates them into two separate entities, what happens if he binds them together by saying harizu tmurat ola ushlamim? He binds them together with one single word of tmura, and the tmura is defined by ola shlamim together. What's the din there? So here, does Rabbi Meir there maybe have a different view? Because Rabbi Meir says tfos lashon rishon. That's when you can define a Lashon Rishon. Over here, maybe there is no Lashon Rishon. There is only one Lashon here, which is Tmurat Ola Ushlamim. So that's the nature of the question. Then what's the din there? Lachzot Mahu. Now Rashi sees this as being a nested question, which is Im Timsal Omar. If you say Pashtak Tushtal Lavikula, in that case where he says Harei Zut Murat Ola Ushlami, Rabbi Meir still abides by his position that Tfos Lashon Rishon, and it's an Ola, because once it's an Ola, you can't make it into a Shlamim. What's the din with regards to Lechatzot? And over here, Rashi says Lechatzot means that you define it as being half this and half that. Behemazo, Lechatzot Ola Vishlamim. It should be split between an Ola and a Shlamim. Tosafot over here says that you have to be careful about the language, says, because this is not similar to saying Chetzia Ola, Chetzia Shlamim. It's different than saying half of it is an Ola, half of it is a Shlamim, because that is discussed explicitly in the Gemara Tmura. Be careful, he's saying Lachzot. He uses the word one time. He says Lachzot, Ola Ushlamim. It'll be divided between an Ola Shlamim, not saying half Ola, half Shlamim. That's the nature of the question going to Rashi. In the first case, when you have Tmurat Ola Ushlamim, what do you think? Does Rabbi Meir agree in that case that maybe that is considered to be a single statement rather than Tfos Lashon Rishon? Or do we say Rabbi Meir still believes that's Tfos Lashon Rishon? And if you believe that he still thinks it's Tfos Lashon Rishon, Lachatzot. If you start out instead with Tmura, you say Lachatzot. I want it to split between an Ola Shlamim. Does there Rabbi Meir disagree? Or does he now agree with Rabbi Yossi and say that this is a single statement and we have to do something with this single statement? The Balei Tosafot, it's more explicit in the Shita Mekubetzet Odalit, where he brings the Perish Harach. Rabbeinu Chananel has a different way of explaining the Gemara here, and saying Lachatzot doesn't mean to split, but rather Lachatzot means at Chatzot, at noon. So the difference being, when does it go effective? If when you're speaking it goes effective immediately, then you can ask the question of sequence, which is immediately as it exits your mouth, the articulation itself becomes effective. So then when you say, is it Tumurat Ola Ushlamim, the Ola was out before the word Shlamim could be said. Then if you delay the effectiveness, then maybe you can now bind them together. When you say, Arezu Ola Ushlamim, but it won't be effective until Chatzot, that means when Chatzot comes, the whole Dibur is effective together, because there's no order anymore. The order is taken away by delaying the effectiveness of it. Or do we say it doesn't matter? Even with a delayed effectiveness, you still made a statement that had sequence to it, and maybe it makes no difference. So that's what, according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, is the question over here. The Tosafot raises a very fundamental question, which is that we have a principle throughout Shas, which is, Kol Sheinu B'Zeh Chazeh B'Vat Achat Einu. Anything that you can't do sequentially, then you can't do simultaneously. Meaning that Vat Achat only helps you when, if you did it sequentially, it would have been successful. Then when you do it simultaneously, then we say it could be successful as well. Why over here are we discussing the possibility of Bat Achat being different than B'Zeh Chazeh? Even Rabbi Yossi agrees, when you do it sequentially, that if it's an Ola first, it's not going to be a Shlamim afterwards. It's only when you do it B'Bat Achat that it actually works. So why don't we invoke this principle and say, can't work over here B'Bat Achat because it can't work B'Zeh Chazeh. So Tosfot says V'Yesh Lamar, that over here it could also work B'Zeh Chazeh. Either a kevin de mishkacha b'zeh chazeh could go and demar chetzi l'demei ola v'chetzi l'demei shlamim. If he specifies not that he wants to make it into an ola or make it into a shlamim, rather he says, I want the value of this animal to be half for an ola, half for a shlamim, it would be effective. Or he says, v'avilu b'dushat aguf, mishkacha l'akum b'hema shel shnei shutafim. If you have an animal that's owned by two partners, each partner could be makdish their half of the animal for a particular korban. And it could be half the animal is for an Ola, half the animal is for a Shlamim. That is possible when you have that joint ownership. So he says, because of the fact that we have manifestations of Zechazeh here, you could have Bevat Achat. That's one answer. And then Va'od, he gives a much more fundamental answer, which is not just saying, oh, this is a unique case, or this is special in some way, but rather saying you misunderstood the principle. Va'od, the Chol She'enu B'Zechazeh, Bevat Achat Eino, that principle, Mairi, Davar, Shiata Yehoda Kayemet Shnehem, Shisotrim, Zezeh. It's only true when the statements or the positions are mutually exclusive. They, by definition, cannot coexist. So for instance, a person tries to marry a mother and a daughter. A mother and daughter, those two cannot coexist. Since they are mutually exclusive, if you can't do it sequentially, then you can't do it Bevat Achat. Over here, that's not true. In our case, they can coexist. They are not mutually exclusive. And that's because they have manifestation when you give half the animals an Ola, half the animals a Shlamim. That is a possibility. It doesn't have to be that it's all an Ola or all a Shlamim. You still can take on the Kedusha of an Ola and a Shlamim. That's not mutually exclusive, and you could sell it, and you could use those proceeds to bring an Ola and a Shlamim. So the fact that it is possible and not mutually exclusive eliminates this whole principle, because the principle is only effective when the items are mutually exclusive. And Tosfot also adds on, V'chol she'en b'zeh chazeh mayri, b'davar she'en ha'sheni yochol ochol, machmat shechala rishon t'chila. Another basic part of the principle is that the mutual exclusivity has to do with the fact that if the first thing happens, then by definition the second thing can't happen. So if there's a possibility of both of them being chal, or that the first one doesn't necessarily preclude the second one, then again, this principle doesn't take effect. And that's why the Gemara here does not speak to that issue. So whether it's according to Rashi over here that the question is, when you have Tmurat Ola Ushlamim, and then Lachatzot, you say it should be divided between the two. Whether according to Rabbeinu Chananel that it means Lachatzot, when you have delayed effectiveness, does Rabbi Meir agree in that situation? Here comes the connection to our Gemara. Amar Abaye, Bahai Vadai Mode Rabbi Meir. In that case of Lachatzot, Rabbi Meir definitely agrees with Rabbi Yossi, and you can have this joint Kedusha, or this shared Kedusha between the Ola and Shlamim. And we don't say Tfos Lashon Rishon. Rav Amar, Adayin Hi Machloket. It is still a Machloket. Amar Rava LeAbaye, so Rava says to Abaye, LeDidach Damar B'Havadei Mode Rabbi Meir. If you say here, Rabbi Meir agrees to Rabbi Yossi's position, he no longer says Tfos Lashon Rishon. When he says Lechatzot, Harishchita, Delechich Lechatzot Dami Uplige. We have a case in our Mishnah about Shechita, and Shechita is the equivalent of Lechatzot. Is the same status as Lechatzot, and nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda argues. What I mentioned before is, this sounds exactly like Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yochanan before said the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda was both in the case of Shtei Avodot, and even in Be'avodah Achat. That seems to be what we're discussing over here. Even within Shechita, you're saying that you can have two machshavot, and there'll still be a machlok. This all seems to follow that shita of Rabbi Yochanan, and thereby here, where Rava asks Abaye a question, and Abaye answers the question, rather than just saying, there's also Ilfa, or saying, you're saying this in Rabbi Yochanan, or the Gemara is saying this is within Rabbi Yochanan, they ignore the whole machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa. This is why Balei HaTosafot, like I mentioned before, on the bottom of Chavtenu and Bet, say, the Shtei Avodot is not necessarily two Avodot, and Avodah Achat means a single Avoda, but rather means, Shtei Avodot means two parts of a single Avoda, and then Avodah Achat means one part of that Avoda. In that way, Abaye and Rava could be saying this even within Ilfa, and it avoids that problem of this being only according to Rabbi Yochanan, but even according to Ilfa. Now why is Shechita like Lechatzot Dami? So Rashi explains that for us over here, that's premised on a number of items or a number of concepts. One is, Rabbi Yehuda believes, Mifalgim Mebechatzi Matir, that you can create Pigul even in half of a Matir, Dainu Chatziman Utre Diburei Ninu. When you say two different things, and they are on two different simanim, each siman is considered to be a chatzi matir, because the matir over here is shechita. Shechita only happens when you cut through both simanim. So over here, where you say that you can cut through one siman with the makshava of chutz lizmano, and through the other siman with a makshava of chutz limkomo, that shows you that there is what's called mifagel b'chatzi matir. You can create pigul, even with half a matir, even with just one of the simanim. That's number one. Number two is that Rabbi Yehuda, or at least according to this part of the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda clearly believes that Rabbi Meir of Tfos Lashon Rishon. His shita is premised on the fact that we take the first thing you said, and that is what's binding. The third thing that is being assumed over here is the fact that this is like Lachatzot. Lachatzot means that I'm trying to split the animal. According to the Rabbeinu Chananel, means I'm having a delayed effectiveness. And that here is true in the case of Shechita as well, because Shechita has multiple Zeitim about which you can have this thought, and it's a single Dibur about multiple Zeitim, and Rabbi Yehuda says, Tfos Lashon Rishon, and again, this is premised in the fact that Rabbi Meir and Tmura and Rabbi Yehuda share this common position between them of Tfos Lashon Rishon. As a Rava questions Abaye, he says, I have a case here that's exactly like Lechatzot, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Chachamim. And that means he believes that Tfos Lashon Rishon applies, even in this case. And just to note that the Rabbeinu Chananel's explanation over here of Lachatzot, which is delayed effectiveness, works very well with Rova's trying to bring a proof from there. Rashi is trying to explain to you that the proof is from the fact that you can, in within a single avoda, have multiple makshavot about different kzeitim, because there are multiple kzeitim, and therefore they're not mutually exclusive. In a case here, by chatzot ola, chatzot shlamim, the reason that he would say maybe it works over there, according to Rabbi Meir, is because it's not either an ola or shlamim, it is both an ola shlamim. And similarly, in our case, you could have kzeit of lamachar, kzeit lechutz limkomo, and there are plenty of kzeitim to go around that you can do that with. And that's the parallel between the cases. According to Rabbi Hino Kanano, it's a more fundamental connection between them, which is delayed effectiveness. Which is by the case over here, where you say lachatzot, means that at chatzot it'll go effective, there's olah shlamim factor. And here, in the case of shkita, if you say ein shkita labasof, like Rava, then that's exactly what's happening. You're having delayed effectiveness. You're saying something, but the shkita only takes place at that last moment. So your whole statement is completed before you ever get to that moment at the end, and then that's a question. Is that then effective at the moment of shkita, which is at the end, that your dibur, which has two parts to it, can go into effect simultaneously. And therefore it would be almost identical then the case here, as it is to the case in Temura, and that's why Robo's trying to bring a proof from here, is even stronger according to the Rabbeinu Chanano. So Amalei, Abai says back to Robo, Misavarat ena l'shkita elo basof. You are making an assumption that shkita only takes place at a single moment. And I believe otherwise, that shkita is really a process and not a moment in time. So there is a machloket which we'll get to in the Gemara and Chulin, as to whether shkita happens at a single moment, which is shkita happens when you finish the shkita, when you get through the robe of the simanim, that's when the moment of shkita is. Or do we say shkita is a process by which you can start the shkita, end the shkita, but shkita is taking place all the way along. We have other concepts like that with regards to rentals. Is rental only earned at the last moment when the person's used it, and then at the last moment, then the schar is earned at the sof? Or do they say that the schar is mitchilat sof? You're earning it along the way. So anytime you have a process, you have to ask this question. It comes up in Hilchot Shabbat as well. Bishul is obviously a process. Is bishul the whole process, or is bishul the moment by which you change the item from being not bushel to bushel, that threshold by which it becomes considered to be bushel? Any type of a process, you have this question. So to hear what Abai says to Rava is, you have an assumption here that the statement is being made at a single moment of time when the shechita happens. That's at the end. So therefore, you're going to say to me, it's the equivalent of saying lachzot. You're taking a single statement in a single moment of an avoda and saying split it. That's exactly like saying lachzot. Split it up. Or, according to Rabbeinu Chanan, it's exactly the same, have there be a delayed effectiveness, because it only happened at that moment when the shkita is finished. I don't think that. I think that shkita takes place over time. Well, shkita takes place over time, you have plenty of time in which to have different thoughts. Umishna teinu, damar siman rishon, chutz lizmano, siman sheni, chutz limkomo. You could have one thought here, one thought there, and they could be separate. Now, the Pali Tosafot do qualify that and say, even when you're talking about a process, it has to be discrete parts of the process. It says it happens to be in shechita that there are two discrete parts. There's a siman echad and a siman sheni. So those are two discrete parts, and therefore you can say something or have them be discrete enough that you can assign an amirah to one part of it, assign an amirah to another part of it. Or as we'll see later, by holacha, when you're walking the item, you have different psiot. Each step is another discrete part of the process. If it's a continuous process by which there are no discrete parts to it, then it's very hard to argue that you can have separate dibur here and separate dibur there, because there's nothing that divides them. There's nothing that shows you that there's a difference between the diburim. But here, where you have discrete parts to it, you can say, when I'm doing the shkita, even though he says that makshav av chutz lizmano, and then a makshav av chutz limkomo, you can divide them and say it's not one big dibur, it's not one lechatzot, not dividing it up a single dibur. I'm saying one dibur by the siman, another dibur by the other siman. That is separate diburim, and therefore you can't prove anything to me from this Mishnah. And that's what Abayi says now. And the Mishnah is speaking about a case, but yes, it's Avodah Achat, but what Avodah Achat there, or the Shkita that we're speaking about, is not that it's at the end, and it's a single moment, and therefore it's a single dibur, as if you're trying to split the dibur between these two items. It's actually a process by where you have a Siman Echad, you have Chutz Lizmano, and Siman Sheni, you have Chutz Lim Komo. And in that case, it's not parallel to the case in Temura, you can't use it as a proof. So they say, oh wait, I agree, maybe that's true by Shkita. Shkita is a process. Hare Kmitza. What about Kmitza? You remember that we have the four avodot of the Mincha, parallel the four avodot, the dam, or bringing of a korban. That is, shchita by the korban of a beima is equivalent to taking off the komets in a mincha. Then, the kabbalat dam is the equivalent of putting the komets into a kli sharet. Holacha is the same, taking the dam to the mizbeach, or taking the komets to the mizbeach. And then sprinkling the dam on the mizbeach is equivalent to the haktara of the komets on the mizbeach. So what Rava says to Abai is, by shchita, you can do what you're saying. By shchita, you have, first of all, a process. And number two is you have discrete parts of that process, the two simanim. By kmitza, it's missing all of that. Kmitza is a single act of taking kmitza off, and there's no process involved there. It's a single act of taking it off. And number two is the kmitza itself has nothing discrete within it. I mean, it's a single action that taking it off. And so you can't speak about a process or discrete items in the process. Kmitza is the same thing. And the machloket that we have between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim here by Shchita, they also have in Menachot with regards to a Kmitza. So if I go to Menachot and I say, Rabbi Yehuda says by Kmitza, then we say Tfos Lashon Rishon, there I've got my proof now that in a case where you have Lachatzot Dami, the same case as our Mishnah, but just by Kmitza, we have a Machshavet Nu a Kzayit Chutzlin Kamo and a Kzayit Chutzlin Zmano, and Rabbi Yehuda believes that that's considered to be two separate statements, and therefore Tfos Lashon Rishon. We don't say Eruv Machshavot here. Techila Chatzot Dami Ublige, and Rabbi Yehuda still argues there. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda applies his position of Tfos Lashon Rishon even in a case where it's Lachatzot, and we should bring a proof to me, Rob, over here, that Lachatzot is no different than a case where you said it Harizu Tmurat Olah, Harizu Tmurat Shlamim. Chatzot Nami over there, Victor Komets Mincha Chutz Lizmano Komets Limona Chutz Limkomo. This is a little bit of a problematic Gemara over here, because there are what's called two matirim by the case of the mincha. That is, a mincha comes with livona, frankincense that's put on top of it. When you take off the komets, you also take off the frankincense with it. Now, there's no komets of the frankincense. All of the frankincense, all the livona is taken off the mincha. And then the komets itself is taken off. They're both put into kli sharet. Then you makriv them all in the mizbeach. And so there, if you look in Rashi's gears over here, Rashi's explanation over here, it's not about the komets. It wasn't komets, the mincha, and komets, levona. Rather, he took the komets and the levona, and he put them on the mizbeach, and he was maktir the komets with the machshava of chutz lizmano. He's maktir the levona with the machshava of chutz limkomo. In that way, you create discrete items. The haktara of levona and haktara of the komets, even though they happen together, and they're both maktir the mincha, they are discrete items, similar to Siman Echad and Siman Sheni within a Behema. And so in that way, the case here is not a case of the actual Kmitza being taken off. Rather, once you have the Kmitza and the Levona and the Klisharet, you put them on Mizbeach. Over there, you have two discrete Matirim. And once again here, Rashi notes that Rabbi Yehuda obviously believes that you can be Mefagel V'chatzi Matir. Since both the Levona and the Komets are Matir the Mincha, the Shiraim afterwards, you need both of them. And both of them together create that heter for the shirayim. So you can't be mifagel b'chatzi matir. You can't create mifigel on a half a matir. So here he had a machshev chutz lizmano when he's putting the komets on, and a machshev chutz limkomo when he's putting the levona on. So he only has half the matir where he has that machshev of chutz lizmano. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that would create pigel, and that would be a chiyub karet. So Abaye once again answers the question and says the cases are not parallel. The chatzot is literally, there's one item that you're trying to divide into two. It's a single moment, it's a single action, and you're trying then to infuse two things with kedusha. Over here, in our cases, that's not true. By the case of shchita, you have two simanim. So each siman could be a separate entity or considered to be a separate dibur. Similarly with the komets, you have two matirim that are going to mizbeach, levona and the komets, and you can see those as being discrete items, or as if they are two separate statements. Therefore, it's not parallel to our case of the chatzot. Begmar says, wait a minute. Hare komets de minchat choteh. What about the kmitza of a minchat choteh? The leka levona behadei. There is no levona along with it. Upligay, and they still argue. So here you have one of the minachot that you bring. We discussed this the other day, that a minchat choteh is plain. It comes without oil, and it comes without levona. Even though you would say maybe it shouldn't be that way, because then chote niskar, because he's a sinner, he brings a lighter form of mincha. This comes when you have a korban ulevi orei. Korban Olivei Reid offers three opportunities to bring a korban. Behema, the highest level. Of is the second level. Mincha is the lowest level. That's a minchat koteh. We discussed this in Shavuot. Spent a lot of time on that in the different korbanot Olevi Yoreid. This is the lowest level of the korban Olevi Yoreid is a minchat koteh. But a minchat koteh is a kmitza that lacks libona. There is no libona there. Therefore, you have a single action, a kmitza. And within that single action, you have a thought about chutz lizmano and chutz limkomo. So that sounds like lachatzot, and yet they argue. Rabbi Yehuda argues in that case. Mar says, lo plige. They don't argue there. Who says that they argue in that case? They argue in a case of a regular mincha that has a komet. Who says that they argue in a case by minchat chuteh? You don't have any evidence of that. You only have evidence of the fact that they argue by a mincha. Amar Rav Ashi, im tim salom ar plige. Even if you believe that they argue by the case of a minchat chuteh, plige bibsiot. They don't necessarily argue there about the komets of the minchat koteh. They argue about the psiot. They argue about the whole lacha, taking that komets to the mizbeach. There again, you have, within a single avoda, you have discrete items that are taking place. Holacha means getting the komets to the mizbeach. There are discrete steps that you're taking, literally steps along the way. Therefore, you can have two makshavot that you could separate between them, consider them to be shnei diburim, because each Makshava was with one step, and therefore now there are discrete parts of a single thing. So one way to answer the problem is say they just don't argue by minchat koteh. Ravashi adds on, even if you want to say that, or it's the other gear says Ravasi, says you want to argue over here, and say they do argue in the case of minchat koteh, they can argue in the avodah of holacha, where there are discrete parts to it, and once again, you can't prove anything against the bayis position here. It's not necessarily supportive of what Rava says, that the argument of Tfos Lashon Rishon applies even by Lachatzot. Rav Shimi Barashi Matnei Kida Abaye. Rav Shimi Barashi put together or learned like Abaye, which means that he believed that the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi only existed in the cases of Tumrat Ola, Tumrat Shlamim, or maybe even by Tumrat Ola Ushlamim, but by the case of Lachatzot, Rabbi Meir would agree to Rabbi Yossi and say there's no longer Tfos Lashon Rishon, because they're considered to be a single entity. Ravuna Barnatan Matnei Kavrova. Ravuna Barnatan learned like Rava and said their machloket persisted even in the case of Lachatzot, and obviously in the case of Murat Ola Ushlamim, of course they're going to argue there as well. Right? Kiata Rav Dimi, Mar, Rav Dimi came, and generally when Rav Dimi came, he's coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, bringing Memrot of Rabbi Yochanan. Veer does not explicitly say that he brought it from Rabbi Yochanan, but we're going to see that someone else has a different Mesorah from Rabbi Yochanan. So either Rav Dimi wasn't bringing this from Yochanan, or he was bringing it from Yochanan, and he disagrees with the other version of what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Meir, Shitat, Rabbi Yehuda, Amra. Damar Tfos Lashon Rishon. Rabbi Meir, Shita, and Tmura is relying on, based on the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. This is what we've been saying all along. This is a basic part of the questions of Rav and Abaye, which is that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir share the same view, which is Tfos Lashon Rishon. Just like there in Tmura, the question of Rabbi Meir is Tfos Lashon Rishon. So to over here, the question of Rabbi Yehuda is Tfos Lashon Rishon. Do you go after the first statement, and that's the only binding statement? And that's why if you do Chutz Lizmano first, that's the only binding statement, and it is Pigo and Chayav Karet. The other hand, if you have another psul first, that's the one that takes effect, and that bumps out any other possibilities because of Tfos Lashon Rishon. And Rabbi Meir, by Tmura, says whatever your statement is first, if it's about an Olah, you're done at that point. Anything afterwards is meaningless. It's not. Am Rabbi Yehuda Zeklam im Machshevet Hazman Kadma et Machshevet Hamakom Pigul V'Chayin LaVakareit. According to our Mishnah, which says that order matters, and the order matters because of Tzvos Lashon Rishon. Am Le Abaye. Abaye says back to Bar Rabba Bar Chano. Am Rabbi Yochanan. So he says to Rav Dimi, who's bringing this memra from Eretz Yisrael, what about the Mesorah we have from Rabba Bar Chano? Am Rabbi Yochanan. Kol Magat Lahu. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Badadadi, Lo Plige. In any case where it is a single entity that you are trying to create, even though it has multiple parts, even Rabbi Meir agrees to the position of Rabbi Yossi. So again, in a case where you want to be Makdishit, both as an Olah and as a Shlamim, everybody's going to agree. That's what you did. Lo Plige? What do you mean they don't argue? Va Miflag Plige? The Mishnah says that they argue. Amalei, Plige, Bemaite, Plige. Lo Plige, Bemaite, Lo Plige. They argue about what they argue. They don't argue about what they don't argue. Which means that you are making an assumption that their machloket is about Tfos Lashon Rishon. That doesn't have to be true. They may be arguing, they just may not be arguing about that issue. They might be arguing about a completely different issue, and that is, Damar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rav Yochanan, Hakol Modim, everybody agrees, Hecha Damar Tchol Zo, V'Achakach Tchol Zo, if he says, I want it to be an Olah, and then I want it to be a Shlamim, Divrei Hakol Lo Chayla. Everybody agrees, it's Rav Meir and Rav Yosef agree, it's an Olah, and not a Shlamim, because you did it sequentially. You said it will be an Olah, then it will be a Shlamim. Olah goes effective, and it knocks out the possibility of the Shlamim taking effect. Lo tchol zo, elim kein chalazo. This will only take effect if the other one takes effect. But he's premising the two statements on each other. They could only take effect simultaneously. They cannot take effect uniquely or sequentially. Tivra kol chayla. Both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi agreed that it is effective, and you get an Olah and a Shlamim. Ki pligay, where do they argue? Damar tzmurat Olah, tzmurat Shlamim. But he stakes a statement that says it's tzmurat Olah and then tzmurat Shlamim. He should have said tzmurat Olah u'shlamim. He should have said it that way. Vamar. Instead, he said tzmurat Olah tzmurat Shlamim. Shlamino mihalter kamader be. We're going to read into his words the fact that he said tzmurat twice means that he was retracting his statement. He was trying to back out of what he said, because otherwise, if he really wanted it to be happening simultaneously, he would have said tzmurat Olah u'shlamim. He would have combined the terms together. The fact that he made them as two separate statements shows you that he had something in mind and he said, you know what, I want to change my mind. Rav Yosi, Iyamar Tzmurat Olah Shlamim, Hava Amina Palgo Tzmurat Olah Palgo Tzmurat Shlamim. So here, as Rashi explains here, he had a mistaken assumption. He had a mistaken assumption that if he said Tzmurat Olah Shlamim, it'd only be half an Olah and half a Shlamim, and it can't go on the Mizbeach. Oh, Iyamar Tzmurat Olah Tzmurat Shlamim. Therefore, he said, I want it to be a Tzmurat Olah, I want it to be a Tzmurat Shlamim, as if to say, I want it to be totally an Olah and totally a Shlamim, which obviously is an impossibility. It is an impossibility to do that, but nevertheless, he has this mistaken impression that if because if you say it's half Olah Shlamim, then it doesn't go on the Mizbeach. But if I said it's all an Olah and all a Shlamim, it would go on the Mizbeach. It's wrong. In both cases, it doesn't work. But nevertheless, what Rabbi Yossi says is, in both those cases, he's not trying to retract the statement. In both those instances, he's trying to have both kiddushot be chal. In that case, you have a limited machloki between them. The machloki between them is b'may b'plige. What they argue about, not about tfos lashon rishon. That's clearly not what they're arguing about anymore. They're arguing about is how do we interpret the intent of the individual through what he said? Does the articulated language give you an indication of what he meant? He says tumrat olah u'tumrat shlamim. Is that really an indication that he was trying to say two statements and trying to retract? Or is that still considered to be a whole statement where he's trying to have it be chal, both of those items simultaneously? So then, Amalei, Rav Dimi says back to Abaye, Huda Amar Lo Plige. He says, yeah, Rabbi Barchana says that they don't argue. Vana Amina Plige. And I say they do argue. Meaning that Rabbi Barchana's explanation, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, is very nice. But that's his explanation of their machloket. And therefore, according to his explanation, they don't argue about Tfos Lashon Rishon. But I don't agree with his explanation. I think they argue in all these cases. And therefore, they are arguing about Tfos Lashon Rishon. And I can make that statement that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have the same position, or Rabbi Meir's position is premised or built upon Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is Tfos Lashon Rishon. So here I have a machloket amoraim. How to explain the machloket in Mishnah Mura as to whether their machloket is an independent machloket that has to do with intent, and that's what they're arguing about. That's Rabbi Barchana. If that's the case, first of all, then you can't say Rabbi Meir is in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, but more importantly, then that whole Mishnah is not relevant to our case of here in our Mishnah. The two are talking about totally different things. You can't compare or contrast the Mishnayot because they're talking about different cases. Our case is a case of Tfos Lashon Rishon. That's a case where Tfos Lashon Rishon is not relevant. It's about understanding the intent of the individual. On the other hand, Rav Dimi says, Rabbi Meir is in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and their machloket over there is about Tfos Lashon Rishon. By the way, say your first statement is binding and everything afterwards is meaningless. That's Rabbi Meir's position, similar to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah. And again, if you think then that their positions are parallel, then you can start asking questions from our Mishnah on your view in the Mishnah in Tmura. Amar Ula, Vitei Rav Hoshaya. Efshe Yadayin Chavrin Bavla. Is it possible that our good friends in Bavel know Kazayit Kazayitznan? Oh, Kazayit Ukazayitznan. What is meant in our Mishnah, or what is said in our Mishnah over here, that is to do with the part of the Mishnah that we started discussing this morning, which is Lechol Kazayit Bachutz, Kazayit Lamachar. When he made that statement to eat a Kazayit Bachutz and then a Kazayit Lamachar, did he say it as a single statement with a Vav HaChibur between them, which is kazayit bachutz v'kazayit lemachar, or is he saying kazayit bachutz kazayit lemachar? Does the vav then make it into a klal, or does the vav a separator and make it into a prat? So here you have a question with regards to the nature of the vav and the nature of these statements, and it has broader implications. It's not just a question that is limited to here. It's a question in when people make statements that include a vav in them, what do they mean? Do they mean to include everything together as a single entity? Or do they still mean to enumerate it as a detailed item, singular items within a larger statement? That's what he says here. Kazayit, kazayit, nan. Do we say that there's no vav achibur here? Aval kazayit, kuzayit, tibia koli, ruv, makshavot, havi. But in a case where he did have a vav achibur, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's eruv makshavot. You have a mix of thoughts here. And therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree there's no more precedence. There's no more sequence to what you're saying. And everything is pasul. That he still considers it. When you have a vav there, he says that doesn't mean it's a cloud. It means that it is a prat. The vav is considered to be a vav achiluk, and it divides it up into separate entities. Again, this is the whole question. If it's two separate diburim, you can speak about sequence, you can speak about tfos lashon rishon. If you do it as a single dibur, as a unit, then you can't break it down into a rishon and acharon. It's all one statement. But if you believe the Mishnah already has kazayit ukazayit in it, then Rabbi Yehuda is making his argument even in that case and saying that even with the vav, it's still considered to be separate tiburim. Or in essence, is the vav a vav a chibur? Or is the vav a vav a chiluk? Is it dividing up and keeping it as separate entities? Or is the vav something that's mechaber into a single entity, into a single dibur? That's the nature of the question over here. If you look quickly in the Balei Tosafot, he notes over here, he changes the girsa in the Gemara in Shavuot to say, but he says, I don't owe you money, I don't owe you money, I don't owe you money. Then he only has to bring one korban, the klolahavi. Because over there it's a division into details. Over here it sounds just the opposite. The tfei amiru machshavot kazayit u kazayit mi kazayit kazayit. That we have a vav there, it makes it into a single entity rather than its separate entities. Therefore, it says you need to switch the girsa in Shavuot to match up with the girsa over here. Chayin mashmahot of Yerushalmi. And Yerushalmi in Shavuot seems to support this change of the Rabbeinu Tam because you could have viewed it just the opposite. And that's what he's pointing out. The Gemara in Shavuot says it's just the opposite. That when you have it without a vav, it sounds like there, that's more of a reason to believe they're one entity. And the vav is a vav achiluk over there, and the vav makes it they're separate entities. Rabbeinu Tam said we're just saying the opposite over here. We're saying over here that kazayit, kazayit is clearly two entities. The question is, if kazayit ukazayit become a single entity, we're saying the vav is a vav achibur. So for that reason, he says he changes the girsa in Shavuot to comply with what the Gemara here is saying, that vav is a reason to believe you have a single statement and a closer statement rather than separate statements. Now we have a interesting discussion over here that is really Gemara logic, trying to take a statement or a question that was posed and then infer from that what happened. Tashma, the boy mine Levi mi Rabbi. Levi asked Rabbi your question, which you just were wondering about, which is, chishev lechol kezayit lemachar bachutz. On a single kezayit, he wants to do it both the machar tomorrow, and bachutz. He wants to do both of them. Mahu, what's the din? Amalei. So Rabbi says back to Levi, zo she'ela. That's a really good question. What you're asking is a stark question. Eruv machshavot Rabbi. He answers him, that is Eruv machshavot. And even according to Rabbi Yehuda here, there is no tfos lashon rishon, because they're considered to be a single statement. So over there, clearly, when you don't divide up the kzeitim, it's obvious that there's only one statement there. And therefore, you have Eruv Machshavot. That Eruv Machshavot means there's no sequence over here, and there's no longer this principle of Tfos Lashon Rishon. And even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that it is Pasul without there being a Chiyuv Karet. If you look in the Shittim Mekubetz at Otei, he asks, isn't this the same question that we really posed with regards to the Mishnah in Tmurah? And he says, Tema, the Keva and the Bechad Kazayit Kamechashe, if I would like Tmurat Ola, Uku Tmurat Shlamim. Damrein Leel, Tfos Lashon Rishon. He says, "Ve'ishlamar the lo domi," that the cases aren't exactly alike. Dohotom iefshar the kayim shneim. Over there, it's impossible to be kayim. They're mutually exclusive. Dein kedusha chala kedusha, because you can't have an olah and a shlamim bichal together. When he says both tomorrow and outside, he can do both of those. He can be makriv the korban outside tomorrow and accomplish both of them. Because they can both be effective. And that's maybe the nature of the question over here in the Gemara, which is since these aren't as mutually exclusive as Olah Shlamim, even though we found manifestations of Olah Shlamim, it's still in each half they're mutually exclusive to each other. Here it's much more so where they can overlap because they both can be accomplished simultaneously and they can both be effective in the same kezayit. And therefore there is a distinction which is great enough for us to ask the question here, independent of what we decided already before with regards to the Temura. So now, Amar lefanav Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi. So Rabbi's son, Rabbi Shimon, pipes up and says to him, Lo Mishnatenu hi? Isn't that our Mishnah? You're telling Levi, he asked this wonderful question with all these superlatives about how good a question he asked. It's in a Mishnah. It's our Mishnah. Lechol kezayit b'chutz, kezayit l'machar. Kezayit l'machar, kezayit b'chutz. Kechatzi zayit b'chutz, kechatzi zayit l'machar. Kechatzi zayit l'machar, kechatzi zayit b'chutz. Pasul, vein bo karet. Ha idach, eruv machshavot avi. Anything besides that would be eruv machshavot. He says, our Mishnah tells you that when you have two separate zaitim, that's where Rabbi Yehuda argues. But that means that in other cases where you don't have separate zaitim, it would be considered eruv machshavot, and Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't argue. Samalei, who shall be davar chuchmah? But amart mishnatenu? He says, he asked me a brilliant question, and you're telling me the Mishnah? Lididach. To you, my son, Rabbi Shimon, da'at nitach tarte. I taught you the Mishnah in the following manner. I told you that our Mishnah is both by kezayit kezayit and kezayit ukezayit. I said to you that it doesn't matter whether you have a vav in there or you don't have a vav in there. Rabbi Yehuda argues. So I gave you that there are multiple scenarios of our Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda argues. The fact that I told you there are two scenarios where he argues, that means that it's dafkor in our Mishnah that way. And anything else is not considered to be a separate thought, and it would be Erev Machshavot. So for you, it was easy. You said, oh, the Mishnah says Kezayit, Kezayit, and the Mishnah says Kezayit, Ukezayit. So both of those would be argues. But that means that if it's Kezayit, Chutz L'machar, where it's only one Kezayit, then of course, for you, that agrees that it's Erev Machshavot. Because you could infer that. So Lo Kasha L'cha. So therefore, you didn't have any question about it. Lididei, Delo Anite Elechado. To Levi, I only taught the Mishnah one way. I taught the Mishnah, Kezayit, Kezayit, without the Vav in it. I never mentioned the case of Vav to him. Vishaminu l'Rabbonu dekargar seitarte. And then he goes to the Beit Midrash. He finds other Talmidim of Rabbi learning the Mishnah and saying, Kezayit, Kezayit, and saying, Kezayit, Ukezayit. Both of those cases apply in the Mishnah. Now Levi's confused. V'savar. Didi dafka. Did he do Erev Machshavot Avi? So then Levi starts to think to himself, Rabbi only taught me Kezayit, Kezayit, without the Vav. And these chachamim who learned by Rabbi are now saying that the Mishnah is applicable both by kezayit kezayit and kezayit ukezayit. So we have two possibilities in Levi going on in Levi's head. He says, one possibility is that I'm right. And when Rabbi taught me kezayit kezayit, he meant that's it. And then kezayit ukezayit would be considered erev machshavot. And what the chachamim did over here is they extrapolated themselves and they're wrong. They're doing it wrong. It wasn't from Rabbi they got this Mesorah. Their Mesorah was just like my Mesorah, kezayit kezayit. And that means Kezayit Ukezayit is considered to be Erev Machshavot. They're saying something different. They extrapolated and they made a mistake. Odoma, Didu Dafka. Or maybe what they got was the right Mesorah from Rabbi. Ule Didi Shure Shirely. He says, and for me, he left over something. He didn't give me the full Mishnah. Now, this is always the challenge within a Mishnah, which is a Mishnah is always written B'derech Kitzur. You try to do it in the shortest hand possible. It's trying to be a summary or a highlights of points. It's not trying to give you all the details. So a Mishnah is balancing between sufficient information to tell you the idea, but in a way that is compact and concise enough that it matches the type of conveyance that a Mishnah is. That embedded in the Mishnah is more than it can be seen, but it's given to you through these highlights or these points that are made here. So what he's saying is, maybe Rabbi just taught me Kezayit Kezayit, but that's not what the limitation was. He meant more than that, and he left out Kezayit Ukezayit. And just like he left out Kezayit Ukezayit, he also left out Kezayit Lamachar Ubachutz. He left out all the cases. You can't say that he taught me something and he left one thing out. This is the Gemara asks everywhere else in Shas. Anytime the Gemara says that a list in a Mishnah is not exhaustive. Generally, when the Mishnah gives you a list of items, we assume that that list is exhaustive, and then anything else is excluded from it. So now you come along and you say to me, I found something outside that list. The din will be that it's not applicable because it's outside the list. But many times the Gemara will come along and say, Shaya, it's not an exhaustive list. They were giving you examples, not an exhaustive list. The Gemara will then ask immediately afterwards, my Shire, the high Shire. What else did it leave over? If he left over one item, you can't claim that he said it lav dafka. Can't be that he said one item and there's only one other item and he left it out. If that's the case, he should have included it. If he left out multiple items, then you can speak about shorthand. That he said some shorthand principle and then there are multiple items left out. It's not an exhaustive list. So the Gemara basically is seeing a similar idea within Levi, which is, he's hearing the Chachamim say something was left out. And he says, you know what? The fact that Rabbi left that out for me, maybe he also left out that other piece of information for them. And there's more to this Mishnah than just simply kazayit kazayit. In that way, his question is a brilliant question. Since he left out for me kazayit u kazayit, then he left out for them kazayit lamachar u bachutz, and I don't know. Which lashon did he teach Levi? Before the I told you already, but the Gemara said he taught him one of the two languages. Which of the two languages did he teach him? Ilema kazayit u kazayit atne. If he taught him kazayit u kazayit with the vav, hai lav shiurahu. That's not being left over, because automatically, if you know kazayit u kazayit is considered to be separate entities for Rabbi Yehuda, then certainly in the case of kazayit kazayit is considered to be separate entities, and that's not left over. If he taught him kazayit u kazayit, then he could have extrapolated himself that kazayit kazayit without the vav is clearly a machlok Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Ella kazayit kazayit atne. He taught him kazayit kazayit without the vav. Riti bayale kazayit u kazayit. Then why didn't he ask him about the case of kazayit kazayit? Why is Levi posing the furthest case, the most extreme case, which is kazayit lamachar ubachutz? What about the interim case, which is kazayit u kazayit, which Levi also doesn't know what Rabbi's position is? So savar yibay minei chado dishmana tarte. Says, I'm going to ask him one question from which I derive the answer to both questions. If I asked him, which is the question he doesn't know, if he tells me that that's one entity now, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim in that position, then I'll know the answer to the other, more extreme case, which is, certainly there Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim. If he tells me in the end, that is still a machloket Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim with regards to kazayit to kazayit, akati kazayit machar b'chutz kami b'ayli. I don't have an answer to the more extreme case, because yes, Rabbi Yehuda argues in the case of kazayit kazayit, he argues in the case of kazayit u kazayit, but we don't know if he argues still in the case of kazayit machar b'chutz. Iochi hashtanami hatinach. Wait a minute, if then when he asks it the other way around, he asks about the question of the extreme case, kazayit machar u b'chutz, if he answers him and says that even in that case, Rabbi Yehuda argues, even in the case of Kazayit Lamachar Ubachutz, he argues, then Kol Shekein Kazayit Ukzayit, then he would have an answer to both questions, because you get the answer to the most extreme case, and he can extrapolate to the less extreme case of Kazayit Ukzayit. If it's already considered to be separate entities, but you combine them into a single Kazayit, then certainly when there are two Kazayitim, they're going to be separate entities, and Rabbi Yehuda is going to argue. Eliyam Arle Kalola, if he answers him in the end that is a klal, meaning that's considered to be a single entity, akati kazayit u kazayit mi bayile. He still doesn't have an answer to the middle case. He knows in the case of kazayit, kazayit without a vav, that Rabbi Yehuda argues. He knows in the case of kazayit lamachar b'chutz, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue. What he doesn't know is that middle case of kazayit u kazayit. So how does asking the question about the extreme case help him more? He's going to have to ask both questions in the end anyway. So when I says, im kain, meratoch ratoch. He would get angry at me. Hashta kazayit u kazayit klolo, kazayit lamachar b'chutz mi boye? Because it would have been so obvious. So he would get angry at him. If he asked him the case, the far-fetched case, which is kazayit lamachar, kazayit b'chutz, and the case of kazayit u kazayit, is also considered to be a case where Rabbi Yehuda doesn't disagree, he's going to get upset at me. He's going to say, wait a minute, kazayit u kazayit, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue anymore. You have to ask me about kazayit lamachar b'chutz? I mean, that Rabbi would get upset at Levi saying that's such an obvious outcome of the fact that kazayit u kazayit is already considered to be one entity and not separate items. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue there. If he doesn't argue there, of course he doesn't argue over here. But if he believed that kazayit u kazayit was different, he wouldn't get angry at him. He'd say, you know what? Kazayit lamachar b'chutz, over there, Rabbi Yehuda agrees. But he would say it in a softer way, not as if it's so obvious you should have known this, because it's not obvious. It's the exceptional case, and the other case would not be. So from Rabbi's response, he would have known what it was. Now, the Balei HaTosafot ask over here, and the Shita Mekubetzet says you could say the same thing in the other scenario. In the other scenario, obviously one of the two answers would be more obvious than the other. If in the other case, he said to him, Kazayit u Kazayit, and he said to him, listen, Kazayit Machar B'chutz is already considered to be where Rabbi Yehuda argues. What are you asking me about Kazayit u Kazayit? He argues even in the most extreme case. What are you asking me over here? You could have the same scenario backwards. But Rashi, in Elu Trefot, says, it's only a case where you get angry where he's going to be makil. So he only gets angry where you should have known something because you're going to be makil rather than machmir. It's not relevant, that statement of Rashi, that determines between matir and auser. If you make a mistake to be auser, it's less of a problem than if you can make a mistake to be matir. So there he's going to get angry. Over here, there's no relevance. There's no iser and heter over here. Ella, karata achlefi, shemeatzmo haya lo lahavin. He should have understood from himself this information. That Rashi Shita, even though in other places says that ratach is associated with being matir rather than being oser, over here matir and oser are not relevant. Therefore Rashi over here says that the reason is that he should have understood by himself. And the ratach is not that he's really angry at him, it's just saying to him in a more frustrated manner, you should have known. This is information you could have extrapolated yourself. Why are you asking me this question? Meaning that when you go from something that is less extreme to the more extreme, it means that you understand the sequencing of the hierarchy of what's being asked. On the other hand, if you go straight to the most kitzoni, far-fetched and far-reaching question, that means that maybe there's something missing in this person's understanding, that he jumped that far and he doesn't realize that there's an interim step. And that by itself is the reason why he would get angry about it if he did it in the kitzoni side. Whereas if he did it in the less extreme side and asked the question, he wouldn't have gotten angry then, and he would have no evidence from that. But then the Shita Mekubetzet brings a different interpretation. He says, "Afimah sheperish harav Rabbi Yehuda mikorbil sham, the case of Elu Trefot, necha." Then the explanation of Ratach over here doesn't have to be different than it is in Elu Trefot. Rashi in Elu Trefot says it has to do with Isser and Heter, which is not relevant over here, so he has to give a different explanation over here. But the Rabbi Yehuda mikorbil over there says, you know what Karatach is? Depends how you pose the question. If you pose the question as if you're going to ask another question, which means you're asking one question, and the answer of the question realizes that this is just the first of two questions that you're going to ask, then he's not going to get upset, because then he realizes you understand that there are two problems over here, and each one of them has to be addressed. Then if you pose a question where you have no intent of asking any other question, that shows that you assume that the other thing or the other item is not a question. And that's where he's going to get upset. He's going to get upset because you don't realize that there are two questions here instead of one question. And when he posed it as a single question, then if Rabbi got upset, he'd understand that there are two questions here. If Rabbi didn't get upset, then he would know that his one question is the only question at hand. And that's the way he could determine from the nature of his question, which is how does Rabbi respond to the fact that he's only asking one question? If he responds, it just gives him an answer, then that's it. That's the only question. I mean, the other case was not part of this question, and the other case, clearly Rabbi Yehuda argues. If, on the other hand, he gets upset, gives him an answer, indicating to him that, why don't you ask about the other case? That shows you that the other case was also a question, and that's how to get the information from it. So that's a different way to explain Karatach over here, and we're going to stop here on the top of Lamed Aleph, two lines down.